Okay, you want us to give the cue from here, is that right? Righto. Hello, NBC recording. Hello, NBC recording. We have some Herb Plambeck material for WHO Des Moines to be held at NBC pending instructions from WHO. The first spot we have for you is 5 minutes and 48 seconds in duration. And we'll start that 15 seconds from now.
Of communication zone from a hotel window overlooking much of this city, and can see the Dutch flag with its red, white, and blue stripes proudly, yes, joyously waving over the nearby Parliament building. Not far away is the famous Peace Palace, and I see churches and ivy-covered brick or stone homes with their chimneys and red slate roofs, and streets with many banners just where they were put on that glad gay day of liberation. Earlier today, I saw much of the Netherlands farming country, its perfectly level land and canals and windmills and fine Friesland cattle and neat farmsteads. We also saw where war took its toll. I'd like to tell you about these sites, but there's something that has impressed me much more. I have reference to hungry people, of whom I've seen a lot these past 24 hours. Weak, thin adults, pitifully undernourished children, the tragic result of 5 years under the Nazi heel. There have been many ways in which the cold fact of hunger was impressed on me. First, in the very appearance of many of the people, big, strong men, once nearly 200 pounds, now not more than 130, women, thin and frail, children so badly undernourished they've grown and gained very little compared to normal youngsters, and their legs and arms are frightfully thin. Their faces pale and seldom smiling. We talked with quite a few people in Rotterdam and other cities. The stories they tell of the last 6 months before liberation are hard to believe. One man, the father of three, told of a whole week without bread and only a few small containers of skim milk, with no meat for several months and virtually no potatoes. And of course, there were no sweets or butter. Fortunately, it's some better now, but in terms of our American meals, still very inadequate. And in terms of their needs, here, every ounce of food is still much more precious than gold. The families in Rotterdam to whom we gave half our rations were tearfully grateful. I'm not sure they got them all home, though. There were many others whose children likewise are still hungry. In another city, we asked directions of a man who was carrying home a small pail of soup. This he had managed to salvage where he works, and his family would have it as a special treat tonight. At another place, I went into a butcher shop. The bacon sides and sausages I thought were there proved to be nothing more than plastic imitations, and the cans with their tempting labels were very empty. Only dried meat was to be had there. Later, here in The Hague, while I was inquiring directions to a poorer section where we were going to bring a few sweets and some of our rations, one of my colleagues opened the box to give a hungry youngster some. In less than a minute, he was surrounded by 20 or more people, each pleading for food, everyone still hungry. It came very near being a riot. Then, when I got out to the poorer section, a thin, pale little girl in tattered clothes caught my eye. We asked her if she would take us to her house. Although a bit frightened, she consented, and there in that home, I saw evidence against the beaten enemy more incriminating even than in V-bomb-shattered buildings. Five children, the youngest only four, who often went to bed with a very empty tummy this past winter and spring, or, on better days, had a slice of dry bread for breakfast, with no cereal, no fruit, and no milk. Their noon meals were seldom more than a few vegetables and a small glass of skim milk for the youngest. And their evening meal, a potato and some boiled beets with some soup made from tulip bulbs. How they existed, I cannot say. Somehow they did, but their frail bodies clearly bespeak their suffering. Now things are much improved. There's more bread, a little meat, some fats, a bit of chocolate, as well as several liters of whole milk in each child's weekly ration. To us, this still seems pitifully little, but to them it's a banquet, and they're so grateful. Just how bad the overall nutrition problem in Holland is cannot be said yet. Officials do not have final figures. In this general area alone, there are over 3 million people who have known the gnawing pain of hunger. Surveys are being made now on the number affected by tuberculosis. Special rations are being prepared. Fresh vegetables are coming in. Milk production is increasing. Everything is getting better, but the people are still hungry. And if you could see a little youngster's eyes light up when given a small piece of candy, and his mother's smile when handed a plain K or C ration, you would recall again how much food can help do to win the peace, and how much liberation and food has already meant to these peace-loving people here in Holland. This is Herb Planbeck in The Hague, returning you to WHO.
Okay, NBC recording. That is the end of the first spot. That's number one. Number two, lasting approximately 6 minutes, is next. This is still Herb Planbeck material. We'll go ahead with this number two spot, 6 minutes in duration, 15 seconds from now.
Hello, Bill Diamond. This is Herb Planbeck reporting from the Netherlands, one of the countries I've been extremely anxious to visit, partly because of the hardship endured by people here during the occupation, and partly to have a hasty glimpse at these interesting farm areas. In this report, brought you by wire recorder, furnished through the Channel Communications Zone facilities, we'll deal quite generally with agriculture. We hope to see still more of Dutch farming, and I also hope to eventually catch up with some farm officials here. But while I have access to the microphone, I'll give you some of the impressions already gained at random in our trip up to The Hague and elsewhere toward northern and western Holland. First of all, a word about the land. Wherever I've been in Holland, it's as level as a table. And all of it is drained, of course, by small ditches and tiles into larger ditches, and from there into small canals. It is pumped by diesel, electric, or wind power into larger canals, usually on the other side of the dike. Canals that take the surplus water out to sea. It's an interesting system and a very necessary one. Even so, much land is still underwater here. Coal and fuel shortages caused by the war have made for lack of power facilities with which to pump excess water into canals. Most of the land I've seen looks black and quite productive when properly drained. From what I've seen of the farmers and their wives here, they certainly are doing their best. I can better understand now why the people in and around Pella and Orange City and all the other fine Dutch communities in Iowa and elsewhere in the Midwest are so industrious, and why their homes and farms generally are so neat. They just naturally get that way by virtue of their ancestry. Fortunately, by using a sort of low German tongue, I have been able to converse fairly well with Dutch farmers. Anyway, after the first few minutes, they learn I mean well and that I'm a farmer too, so we usually get along just swell. I found them interesting in every way. As farmers, they have been much more fortunate than their city friends in the terrible food situation existing here during the past several years, and particularly the past 6 months. Their children have at least had some butter and other dairy products, and there has been a little meat and sufficient vegetables and potatoes, whereas in cities, starvation took many lives and has left a countless number of frightfully undernourished. Even so, farmers here have had to do without a lot of things.
clothing has been especially difficult to get.
All are dressed in old apparel, and shoes are extremely hard to get, including the wooden clompen used by most everyone in rural sections. I get quite a bang out of seeing and hearing the folks clomping along, or riding bicycles wearing those wooden shoes. And they do ride a lot of bicycles here. In fact, I saw them leading horses from one field to the other while on bicycles. Now for some more quick farm observations. The cattle here are truly splendid. Most of them are what they refer to as Frieslands. Black and white, just like our Holstein Friesians. But on the herd average, they seem to run larger. In some cases, they're in large community herds, several hundred in one lot. I've seen a few Dutch Belted too, but very few other breeds, although there are some dual-purpose cattle in some sections. Numbers of cattle, I'm told, are down about a third compared to before the war. Some were taken by the Germans, but mostly it was a case of having to cut down because of feed and forage problems and to alleviate the dire meat shortage. At a co-op creamery, I talked with John Vandenberg and other farmers who said their herds were down 40% in number and production was cut more than half. Horses are almost all of the Belgian type. Quite a few were taken by the enemy, though there are a lot of colts to be seen again now. Hog numbers are very low, and poultry is down to 10% of pre-war. Crops are much like those in other parts of Europe, but the acreage is down considerably. Many rye, barley, and other fields have the crop rather short now. We must remember that war still raged here less than 4 weeks ago, so many crops got in late. That fact, plus shortages of fertilizer and help, means yields may be down substantially this year, unless the weather is especially favorable. Sugar beets are another main crop here. Rapeseed is produced in large quantities. The same is true for clover. And there, of course, are countless acreages of cabbage and other vegetables. This is also an important flower and bulb-producing section. But the tulip bulbs evidently are down substantially in numbers. They have had to eat tulip bulbs in vast quantities during this past winter. I've also seen at least one little field of corn, and I was certainly glad to see it. It was about 3 inches high and in rows. Back home, if it stopped raining, you must be nearly through planting corn now. So this is probably the only field I'll see before the first cultivation. Generally, gardens are nicely underway, except where the land is too wet or still underwater. And I'm afraid the total number of hectares inundated in Holland adds up to a rather large figure. Some of it will take a number of years to reclaim. All in all, though, conditions are not as bad as was first feared. But try as they might, farmers here cannot feed the people of Holland as they would like to. Feed, fertilizer, labor, transport, and other problems are too great. But by 1947, Dutch farmers hope to have production back much more nearly to normal, perhaps so that people of this little nation can again know the luxury of adequate food, much of it from their own level, clean, lovely fields. This is Herb Pleinbeck in Holland, returning you to Bill Diamond.
That's all of spot number two. We would like to have a report on the circuit now so we can determine whether or not to go ahead with a third spot.
Better get your report at the end.
Yeah. The point is we have another. Just a moment. Stand by, NBC. Hello, NBC. We have another spot. We'll run in approximately 6 minutes. Now, we only have a 15-minute booking, of which we have less than a minute left. I'll check with Pre-Y New York and Pre-Y here and see if it's possible to run over another 6 minutes here. Is that okay with you? All right. Hello, Pre-Y New York. Hello, Pre-Y, New York. Shafe to Pre-Y, New York. If it is okay at this end, would it be satisfactory to keep telegraph off long enough to run another 6 minute spot through? I'll check with them at this end and see what they say. Right, it'd be, yeah, okay, thank you very much.